Having finished our series on topic by topic through the Book of Romans, I'm starting my story, all about fishing towns and butterfly bombs, at least in this presentation right now. And this is a story to illustrate Jesus' mercy on a sinner, not a story to illustrate, this is what I was, now look what I am. Oh, you too can be like this. No, no, no. We are all in the same bucket, in the same boat, in the same trough, and we all need God's help, whether rich or poor, whether famous or infamous, whether successful or whether failures. And this, then, is a story of one of those men, a royal screw-up, let me tell you, whom the Lord had mercy on. Colin Cook here, How It Happens. Thanks for joining me today. And here we go with another episode in the story. So I was from the city that doesn't go anywhere, halfway between London and Edinburgh, I think, about 170 miles northeast of London, overlooking the east coast, a fishing town, and a place where my dad worked all his life as a fisherman. A place the Nazis saw was rather significant in that it could feed the country, and so they placed mines there, which my dad, as an acting lieutenant, during the Second World War, with his recommissioned ship and all the other fishing vessels that were recommissioned, they swept the estuary of those mines. So my dad was away all of those years. Grimsby, by the way, though it didn't go anywhere, was a rather significant town, in that it was the largest fishing port in the world. Now Hull, just a little north of it, on the other side of the Humber, and Grimsby competed for that claim. Actually, Hull was the largest city, but Grimsby produced more fish. And it was the largest fishing port in the world, as I said, until the collapse of the whole fishing industry around the, I think, just before the 1960s. Well, I was a war baby. I was born in 1940, as I said, and the war started in 1939. Now, I don't remember much, but I do have certain impressions, and I'll tell you about them. I remember the sirens. Oh, boy, did the sirens have an eerie sound that frightened me a lot. We would hear them in the middle of the night, and we were called on by Mom and Dad, come on, come down, and Mom would try to get a hold of me and take me down there. And my older sister, Pam, she was 4 years older than I, and my brother, Charlie, he was a year and a half older than I, they rushed down, usually ahead of me, and the sirens indicated that the warplanes were coming over from Europe, from Germany. And then we had to rush down and outside into the shelters that were made, the bomb shelters at the bottom of the garden. Each house in the neighborhood had a bomb shelter. They were basically dugouts, and then they were covered with a sort of arch of corrugated iron and surrounded by sandbags, and we would be in there until the planes passed. I remember the sirens, and I remember the drone of the planes. You know, the planes would go not only come over from Germany, but they would also fly over from England to Germany via, they would set off at Binbrook, a military airport in my county of Lincolnshire, and they would go over to Nazi Germany there and drop their bombs. And the drone of the aircraft, I have to say, was incredibly unnerving. I remember saying to my sister, wait for me, wait for me, as I'm trying to run downstairs after her. Those days seemed to me to be scary. The bit that I could remember, by the age of four, I could remember things, three and four and five. My mom was a wonderful, wonderful mom, and she tried to protect us and not let us be afraid, but sometimes she would let little things sort of drop out, and I picked up on them. And I remember her saying one day, I can't really remember what she said, but I do remember the idea of what she said, that Germans might come over and invade the country. Whatever language she used, I picked it up, that there might be some people, some bad people, some Nazis, who would come over and take over our country. And all I can think of, all I can remember, is that I feared that they would take Mummy and Daddy away. And, you know, it was a very scary idea. It felt that I was going to be potentially left alone. It's hard to describe this in adult terms. Obviously, it's not something you can put into childhood words anymore. But I had that fear that all would not be well and that something would happen. Now, I, again, cannot remember this, but things did happen. A bomb dropped just in front of our house and blew out the windows and blew off the gate. Now, those were not big bombs in those days. They were big enough. They could have destroyed a house, of course. But they dropped that bomb. And I suppose as a little boy, I would have had a reaction to it, even though I didn't have a cognitive memory of it, a reaction of fear that something really scary was happening. There was something even more scary. Now, I cannot really remember whether this is the name of the bomb, but there was an experimental bomb dropped on our town, Grimsby. Apparently, it was not dropped on any other area of the country, as far as I know. I may be wrong on that, but I think this is the case. It was an experimental bomb in that it was dropped and it did not explode when it landed. But it sort of opened up. I think it might have been called a butterfly bomb. It opened up like a sort of butterfly when it landed. This was dropped overnight. And then when people got up in the morning to go to work, they would often trip over it or touch it with their foot, or not even touch it with their foot, even with the vibrations of their walk towards it, and it would explode. Our next-door neighbor, and we had a semi-detached house, so you can imagine how close we were to our neighbor. Our next-door neighbor, Mr. Page, walked down to the bottom of the yard to put the trash in the trash can. Of course, we called them dustbins in England. And he was blown to pieces. And two or three blocks over, two or three streets, we would say, over, my aunt, her neighbor, went out to work, and his bicycle wheel hit one of these, and he was also blown to pieces, and his wife came out hysterical into the front, to the road where he had come out to, out of the gate, and hysterically she was picking up bits of his body. I don't really want to talk in great detail about all of this, except to say that you can imagine the state of mind that this might have instilled into a little boy. I'm not trying to create a false picture, just an impression that it is not possible for a human being, to a little child, to escape certain impressions, to escape the emotional impact of those events. I remember my mom, even later, when the war was finished, this is when we would be going to school at 8 or 9 or 10, she would say to me and my brother, "Do not pick up anything. Do not pick up anything, not even a bus ticket." Now, why did she say that? Because some of these bombs were still undiscovered. And we might have been sort of wandering through a field on the way to school, and we might have found one and thought we'd played with it, have some play with it. There were no toys then. We couldn't afford toys. There were stories of one or two boys who did, in fact, find a bomb and picked it up and played with it when it wasn't obviously going off effectively, working effectively. And one boy threw it against the wall, and it exploded and killed him instantly. And so you can see that there was an atmosphere of fear in my heart, in my environment, and that I emphasize that because it is going to be an important part of my story as it unfolds. Now, we were a nice little family of mom and dad, although, as I say, dad was at the war and in the first 5 years of my life. And then when the war was over, he went back to sea and was only in the home about 2 days out of every 14. 10 days, 2 days out of every 12. 10 days at sea and 2 days at home and 10 days at sea. But it was, and he was a good dad. He was a wonderful provider. He was not, you know, many fishermen in those days would drink as soon as they came home. Dad didn't. He would always come right home and just be a good family man. He was a well-dressed man, even as a fisherman. He would not come back in his fishing clothes. He would put on his suit and collar and tie and sometimes his Trilby hat or his Homburg even, and he would come home that way. Some people on the docks called Dad the Doctor. He was such a well-dressed man. I liked that about him a lot. Anyway, my sister was, as I mentioned, Pam was 4 years older and Charlie was a year and a half, so I was the older, so I was the baby of the family. And Mom was always at home. We had a small council house, that is a house that was built by the government during those pre-war years and after the war as well. And those houses were solidly built, believe it or not. And we just were a happy little secular family in our neighborhood. My mom and dad lived in the same house for 53 years, a rented house for 53 years. I remember those years as those early childhood years as happy, contented, in spite of these fears that were surrounding us everywhere. But the house, it felt safe, even though a bomb had nearly blown it to bits. So you see, I have not lived a charmed life. Well, we've only just begun, but you can see that from the beginning, it was not a charmed life, but a charming God. How gracious is God? Now, many people died and were blown to bits. Many people were killed during the war. That doesn't mean to get to say God was not charming to them also, because whether we live or die, we are the Lord's. But I do know that God chose for me to live, that God chose for me to continue in this world, to go through all of the harrowing experiences I have gone through for a purpose. I'm convinced that as we trust in God, then all the events that take place in our lives, no matter how difficult they are, all conspire to leading us to Him, to leading us to lean upon Him and to trust in Him. I hope you'll believe that also. Yes, God going to a place that doesn't go anywhere and protecting a house that could have been blown to bits. But He protected it because He had His love in mind for me and He was going to search me out. Not because He loved me more than anyone else, He loves all. But any man who has faith, who is given faith, has been chosen to express that faith to others so that they may have faith, whether we do it in small ways or large ways. I'll see you next time then. Cheerio and God bless.